Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Peter, CEO and founder at Leno. Hey, Peter, great to have you on the show. How's everything going today?
It's going good. It's Friday. Looking forward to hopefully some good Christmas time in the weekend. And of course, talking to you about FinTech and scaling up.
Let's kick off the show with you just giving the listeners a bit of a background about yourself.
Well, my background before starting Leno is a classical business background. Spent some years working for GE Money Bank as head of sales, and I worked for Icano Bank, which is owned by IKEA, for some years as head of sales and marketing. And that was done before I started Leno as a company.
Okay, nice. So let's talk about Leno, and maybe if you could give our listeners just again a bit of a background about who you guys are and what you guys do.
Well, we started the company 4 years ago, and it was actually based on the idea that we could see that less people want to own different kind of assets. People are more focused on having access to assets. Could be cars, could be computers, furnitures, could be all kind of physical assets, but also not physical assets. And we could see that that business area where leasing is kind of the more basic product is growing much more than regular lending. I came from a background from a company both offering leasing and traditional lending, and we could see that there was a huge demand for these solutions that involve leasing and kind of, you know, I'm not interested in owning the assets. I'm more interested in having access to the cars, the equipment. And that's what was kind of one of the mega trends that we saw, that people are moving from ownership to access. But we could also see that this was an area where banks had difficulties providing this product. Typically, they have some specialist that was sitting in another company helping on specific cases, but we want to do leasing as simple as possible. So we want to empower both the digital experience from the consumer, but also for the bank advisors to be able to offer this as simple as they're offering credit line or loan. So this was kind of the background idea to move into this. And we got some venture funds that saw the idea in this. And we also got some senior executive from the bank industry that also liked the idea that we want to empower the bank to offer more products and kind of, you know, make sure that they can be a more kind of, well, I know it's an expression used many places, but be a more kind of financial supermarket with different products where we can be the one helping with the specific leasing product as of now.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I mean, it's an interesting idea and obviously a solution to that. But just to bring it to life for our listeners and sort of paint the picture, could you walk through a simple case study of how the tech is and how the product is used today?
Yeah, for sure. Well, the basic idea is that we are building on top of the core banking system they have. We know that a lot of banks have invested a lot of time and energy in backup and core banking system. So we're not trying to replace that, but instead we're trying to enable that to be able to offer this kind of product. So we follow the process that they have already with your know your customer, credit rating. When they move down the process they have when offering a lending product or credit line, at the time of decision of product, should it be credit lending, we offer the opportunity also to offer leasing as a product. Typical, the client of the bank have already been down looking at the asset they are, you know, fall in love with. Could be the car, could be the truck. And I'm in dialogue with the bank, should I borrow the money for it? Should I use the credit line I have? Or when they have our product, should we do it as a leasing agreement? The idea is the process is as simple as offering the other products. So simple it is to offer leasing as a product. And then when the customer decides to take it as a leasing solution, we follow the process with reporting, invoicing, account statements, so on, that already are in place with the bank. So in to make it as simple as possible, the solution, describe it, it is actually, empower a core banking system that are not built for leasing to be able to handle leasing so that advisor or in a self-service solution can offer the product. We follow the established process with, know your customer, credit rating, and so on.
Yeah, cool. So I quite like it. I mean, it's quite a nice way of allowing customers, as you say, opportunity to look at maybe non-traditional products, but within their current estate, i.e. if they're banking at HSBC or the other, they can also go and lease a car or a truck or...
So this is an idea that, and for many of the banks that we are working with, they want to kind of, be able to offer as many products as possible because they have invested in an extended branch network that, are expensive to run. So the more products they can add, the better it is. We have made some surveys in Denmark showing that 70% of the business they are offering with regards to leasing is new business they couldn't have got elsewhere. 30% is kind of moving a customer from a potential loan to a leasing agreement instead. So of course there is some kind of taking some of the already business, moving that to leasing, but still it's more than 50% that is actually on top of your normal lending to your customers.
Okay, cool. I mean that's, I guess, a really good segue to understanding the and going into detail around the Linio journey. And you mentioned around the idea, and you also mentioned around obviously venture funds backing you and the partnerships that you have created with banks. But if we go into the time machine and we go back to the idea generation and then being able to create that product and market awareness. My question is, how did you engage with these banks and these institutions to partner up with them and get this type of product into their product suite?
When we kind of elaborate on the idea, we spend a lot of time interviewing senior executive of our target banks. As of now, our target banks is kind of the local / regional banks. And we managed to get some meetings and potential interviews with them, kind of sharing our thought about making this product, this setup, and got their initial feedback of how we should do this. And then we also was straight honest with the first bank that said yes to use our system. They should know that we have maybe 80 or 85% done within terms of the system, the solution. You need to help us take the last 10-15% so we can be fully operational. And I think that was one of the good moments in our story. Looking back, is that we were being honest that we need their help to build kind of the first 100% functional solution on this. I think it had been harder for us if we had come to them and said we have already a solution that is completely working, because it also gave them opportunities to involve themselves in designing the solution for them, but also give us an insight we could have not got elsewhere.
So your mindset was at that early stage was that of honesty and collaboration.
It was important for us to say as a small company. I think they were close to 100 times more people than we were. That we knew that we were the small ones. We had a lot of agility in our setup, a lot of ideas and a lot of knowledge, but we still need them to help us with the last part of this.
How's that partnership model played out as you've built out the foundations to scale your business and your product?
It helped the ongoing dialogue after the initial launch, that they could help us develop features, they could help us defining processes that would be nice to embed in our offering. So one thing was helping us from 85 to 100% so it could launch and work, but it also helped us enhance the product offering over time. So when we afterwards got more banks online, we already had the benefit of having both in terms of commercial, saying we have something working, but also we had a deeper product offering because it was already developed as kind of this ongoing dialogue on what is needed to have in the system and what would be very nice to have.
So you used it as a mechanism to refine your product offer. And what about from a people and customer perspective? So did you get access to obviously an SME knowledge base that maybe a startup doesn't always have access to, and also a customer list again that maybe sometimes startups don't always have access to?
We got a lot of access to both, of course, the executive of the bank, but also they were very good at inviting kind of, you know, users on all levels, and actually allowed us a lot of possibility to interact both with the users, but also the end users of our product to understand what is actually going on, both in decision process, but also in kind of your interaction between the client of the bank advisor, but also when you move into the bank in terms of middle office, back office, reporting, so on.
Yeah. And just going back to the scaling side of your business, I mean, how did that play out in relation to your people and your product and your processes that you had to create internally in order to, you know, scale your company and move it along jointly with your partner and the banks that you're engaging with?
Well, from day one, the idea that we and the investors looked into was that this should be a scale game. So we should not be doing individual solutions at all. We should be building solutions that were able to scale. So it was designed from an IT level, so it could be, you know, running in multiple languages, currencies, locations. That was one of the key foundation building it. It was also an ongoing setup for us, is to make sure that the people that are employed in the business is also able to be here when hopefully the company is growing, both in terms of location, but also in terms of number of partners. Building a fintech company is a long journey, but it's important that the people that are here now also have the talent, and hopefully also here in 2 years' time when we are growing, and also here in 5 years' time, so we kind of, you know, have a strong foundation. And that means, of course, that we are maybe having, in terms of other scale-up or startup, at a little higher average salary. But I think that's worth investing in the people, because when it comes down to the cost, we have 88% of all our cost is people. And it's actually those that make the difference in terms of this.
I think you touched on such an important point. I mean, people and the culture with inside, you know, a fintech is so important. And if you nurture that, you can get that breakthrough growth and that rapid scale up. And have you seen that play a part in your growth story to date?
Yes, for sure. I think what these partners we have, the banks, what they kind of respect is that the people they're meeting in a sales onboarding and a data business are people that have domain knowledge about what they're talking about. These banks have a lot of things on the plate. They have all kind of legal requirements, a lot of clients, stakeholders, shareholders. They have a lot of things to kind of, you know, nurture and talk to. So they need the providers they're talking to, and where they kind of outsource or partner up with, that those people are coming with deep knowledge, so they feel comfortable that this part of their setup is handled by skilled people. I for sure can see there's a big advantage of bringing talented and skillful people into the process when you're scaling up.
And I always like to sort of ask the question around talent, because it is quite difficult to always find these individuals and these people that help us. But how have you guys outside of getting the best people, how have you approached it from a talent acquisition perspective? Have you looked at hiring local? Have you looked at a dispersed team? Is it a mixture of both? Could you give us some insight into that?
Yes, for sure. Well, in terms of where to recruit people, we decided to kind of build our tech team or major part of tech team in Portugal. It's not a cost-saving game because when you add in all the cost, it's equally expensive as if you have people in Denmark. It's more about access to talent. Whether you're coding in Danish or you're coding in English doesn't really make a difference. So it was a choice of access to talent there. In terms of overall management of talent and skillful people, I think, of course, we can never compete ultimately with the big banks in terms of salary slip. What we can kind of offering, which I think make a difference, is flexible setup. It's a clear mission of what we will achieve. It's a very, you know, everybody has a saying, because we are a small organization, it's less title-based, but more kind of insight-based. So those that have knowledge or experience or willingness to do it can have actually a lot of possibilities to kind of have a saying on what we are aiming at and how we are solving things. So I think we will not, of course, the basic salary and the benefits have to, of course, to be in line. But I think where we can keep the talent and grow the talent, because it's so important in our business, it is offering these flexible work situation. You know, if you have small kids, you can work more at home. If you have some interest that is placed otherwise, you know, in working hours, you can work maybe in the evening. So you tend to offer the solution that benefit each person and not so much one rule for everybody.
Yeah, and as part of that journey and, you know, moving to, you know, bigger teams and, you know, in your case, a team out in Portugal, it's critical to always have that mission and that mission to be transparent across distributed teams. You know, with that being said, I mean, how do you guys go about making certain that everyone is aligned to the mission and the goals of the company?
We try to, you know, emphasize what different every person is doing every day. So you're not just writing 4 lines of code. You're actually helping a bank advisors having a little simpler day. When we release this, it is kind of make sure that they feel that they are part of something that is actually making a difference. When I get kind of an email from a happy user of our system, you know, make sure that I will share that with those people that actually are doing all this coding and every day trying to improve the UX on our solution. So kind of, you know, involve people in the feedback so they can feel proud, but also involved in what's going on.
Yeah, so constant team collaboration, and doesn't matter levels and seniority and hierarchical structures, it's one team working together to complete a mission together.
Yes, and also the way we speak about things, you know, ultimately, I'm in charge of the company. Should everything go wrong, I'll be the one taking the final decision due to my role in the company. But in the daily, I think we are 15 people that are equal on this, and it's not kind of my workers, it's co-workers. Of course, there is some structure that has to be that. But I think when we have to look at structure, it's kind of, you know, that's the last resort. I think we can do things better when we have the discussion or dialogue about that and take some common decisions.
Yeah, it's so critical to have that communication across teams. And I know you mentioned structure, but have that open dialogue and communication as you grow and you scale. And on that point, I mean, as you move forward and as you, you know, sort of develop your business and your product, what growth strategies are you looking at to leverage and continue on, or looking at testing to as you move forward?
What we're looking at is that right now, for us, the Danish market is kind of more or less done in our perspective. We got a lot of banks and more coming in. So for us, the growth strategy is, of course, outside of Denmark. it is for us in the process right now to how can we make the right growth strategy in this. Should we set up offices or should we do it? Maybe hard in these times, but should we do it all from either Copenhagen or Portugal in terms of this?
As you look to grow, you thinking, you know, cross-border is moving outside of Denmark. Is it into the Nordics or is that still yet to be researched and decided?
Well, of course, in the research, for us, it's more kind of looking at, as we are kind of an overlayer or add-on to a core banking system, it is also to evaluate where are those potential banks. I think there's roughly 6,000 in Europe. Where is there a tradition already or a movement of kind of partnering up with a fintech company? Of course, we are looking at those banks that already have fintech partnerships, saying, well, if you already are in that mindset, you might be more open to other partnerships. Because I think there's a big difference between countries of openness of this partnership, which is essential when you're taking on a new solution as ours is. Mm. The problem with this outside, you tend to, if you are in Denmark, you tend to either look at Sweden, Norway, or Germany, because it's kind of, you know, our neighbors. Mm. But maybe the right solution could for us be, I don't know, Ireland, because we have to look where there's kind of similarity between those banks that we have success with and where there is kind of a similar structure in our case.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like what you're saying there and around making certain that when you do make that leap that you've thought through the companies that actually like engaging with fintechs rather than the ones that maybe need to be persuaded.
Two-edged sort of fintech, I think, is it takes a long time to kind of sell or partner up with a bank. Mm. On the other hand, when you first make a partnership, it's a long-term partnership, but you have to have patient investors and a patient organization, because they might think what you're offering is, you know, they would die if they couldn't have it tomorrow. But it takes time to get on board. It takes time for them to evaluate, is this the right solution for them? Is it the way forward for them? And then half a year is pretty fast gone.
Yeah, no. As we draw to a close in 2020, what questions are you and your senior management team asking yourself and factors are you considering to continue along that growth trajectory and growth story?
Some of the questions we are asking ourselves is, should our sales growth strategy, is that kind of driven only by ourselves? So it's ourselves driving this, or could we partner up with some local partners in the areas or the market that we're looking into that might help us getting kind of in front of competitors or maybe get us on top of the agenda at those banks? And there is a pro and cons to this. If the pros is that, you know, you get an extended a sales team that could help you kind of introduce you to the right people, but then you also lose some of the control and maybe you also lose some of the last kind of touch when selling this, because one thing is to sell a product on behalf of somebody else. Another thing is to hear it from the founders or the people that actually were part of building this. So this is the things that we are considering. How much sales should we do it ourselves, or should we go to, you know, Accenture or somebody else that have the kind of the relationships that we are building as of now?
Yeah, and those partner discussions are, you know, always a good thing to take a look at. And, you know, I guess, as you know, being an entrepreneur and also being a CEO and a leader of, you know, a growing business, you know, we always like to read and prove our knowledge on a continuous basis. So, you know, from that perspective, I was wondering if there is a book that you're currently reading or maybe something in the recent past that you just finished that you think would be useful to others to pick up and take a look at.
Well, actually, I thought about that. There's been a Danish person written a book which has just been translated to English And it's called in English, Debbie from Marketing Has Unfortunately Left for Today. And it's a book written about how you kind of, you know, make changes within your organization, how you make changes regarding how people are acting, and why it is. One thing is for a senior management to say, well, today we are starting to be more customer focused, or now it's important to do this or do that. And then the average employee tend to stop focusing and stop listening because they heard this so many times before. And this book is about, you know, why is it that senior management think that because they had, you know, make a half day workshop and make some nice leaflets and send out some motivating emails, why are people not, you know, directly buying the new strategy? Why they keep doing as they always done? And this guy is writing about what it actually are you going to do if you want to change your organization. So sometimes, so this is, I think it's an interesting book because it keep you to remind you about as you're scaling up the business that you are growing the number of people. Where you in the beginning you'll make a group hug and everybody was touched. Now you may be more people, and at one point you will not be even part of the hiring process. And then there will be people employed that you are not so close to. But how can you make sure that the strategy, the direction, the difference that you're making for your clients, how can you ensure that they also feel that and not just take this as, you know, I couldn't get a job at McDonald's, so why not take Lineo instead? You know, you want to have engaged people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds like an absolutely fantastic book, and I'm definitely going to download it. And it sounds like it touches on so many different elements of scaling. And the crucial part, just coming back to our conversation in the middle there, is the people part and how we get everyone sort of driving towards a mission. I don't think it's ever about coming up with fancy presentations. There's practical things that we've got to do, right?
Yes. And you also make sure that at least we try to explain for every person why they make a difference. It could be the student that comes in 5 hours a week. How is she making a difference to the tech lead that is overseeing all the user stories? How is he making the difference?
I think it's so important and so valuable. I mean, especially around the people thing that we've touched on a number of times today. But listen, as we wrap up the show, how can people get in touch with you and the guys over at Lineo?
Well, I think the best part is, you know, contact me on find me on LinkedIn, contact us, or they can, of course, find our homepage. So we'll be happy to, you know, share our thoughts both on the product that we are making and developing, but also in case, you know, ideas on scaling up and, you know, what they have experienced or what they want to hear about. So always good to have a dialogue. Could be on scaling up, could be on the product.
Great, perfect. And, you know, it's been brilliant having you on the show today. And I really enjoyed the conversation and some really valuable and insightful tips that you've imparted on us. So thanks so much for coming on the show, and look forward to seeing your success next year and excited as to how you scale and move forward into the different markets over the coming year or two.
Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me, and happy to be a part of this.